Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Lorenzo Hagerty. Lorenzo Hagerty and I have just met here at the Mind States Conference, which is about psychedelics, basically, and we're here in Berkeley, California. This is the third such conference, and he spoke yesterday, and I want to welcome you, Lorenzo.
Thank you, Sue. Appreciate being here.
And I did go to your one of your websites, Matrix Masters, and was very I'm going to share this with the audience. Our aim is to provoke an unmuffled, ungagged, and unsilenced generation of world citizens into speaking up and taking the actions necessary to wrest control from the privileged few and to reclaim this planet in the name of all the humans, animals, plants, and other forms of life who share its bounty. So that seems like a real good place to begin. I really like that.
Well, thank you. I see, my role is one of sort of like a carnival barker. All the real action's in the tent, you know, and there's some people who are just brilliant that have all of the, done a lot of the work and written great books. And sometimes people don't see the connectivity between some of these things. So I look at myself and the Matrix Masters website as sort of a the carnival barker metaphor where, boy, there's a lot of interesting stuff here. It's not our stuff, but look at what we found, that kind of thing.
Well, you've done a lot of things. You were just telling me about your evolution through, it looks like, the connections with the military, being a hot air balloon. Is a pilot the right word? I don't know. And just a really myriad of things. I should tell people also that you have written a book called The Spirit of the Internet, Speculations and the Evolution of Global Consciousness. So if there's anything you'd like to, anything else you'd like people to know?
I, one time years ago, had a headhunter tell me I had no career path. And so I've migrated from electrical engineering to, I have to come clean, I practice law for a while, but as I tell people, I've gone straight now. I don't do that for a living anymore. Although I still have my license to lie in Texas, just in case. So I was a Texas lawyer.
But fit right in. License to lie.
Exactly. And long story short, I built a personal computer company in the early 80s, and then the late 80s, the 90s, I was an internet evangelist for a telephone company, and left to write this book because everybody thought it's a book about the internet and e-commerce, but it's really about a carry-on of Teilhard de Chardin's thoughts about the noosphere that he wrote in The Phenomena of Man. And in a later paper in 1947, he even mentioned that the noosphere would need a mechanical infrastructure. And I thought, I know about the internet. I know about the noosphere. I have a new idea. And then I started researching this book and found about 200 websites talking about it. And so long story short, I put my thoughts together about what consciousness is doing in relation to technology, and try to bring some sort of a spiritual, not a religious, but a spiritual dimension of consciousness back into our technological discussions, and to take a look at where technology is taking us, particularly us, our consciousness these days. So that was my thrust, and from there I'm now working on some hands-on projects to test some of these things as well.
Well, yeah, I do the internet because I have to, but it doesn't grab me like it does a lot of people. Maybe I'm too old, probably, but whatever it is, I don't necessarily think it's the answer to everything. But I'm very interested in this conference, actually. A lot of people are involved in the internet who are also involved in entheogens, and maybe we should define what entheogens are. Maybe you could do that better than I, Lorenzo.
Sure, and in fairness to the producers of the conference, the conference isn't strictly about entheogens or psychedelics, whatever you want to call it. It's about expanded states of consciousness. And as Richard Boyer at the Center for Cognitive Liberty, a legal group, has pointed out, that what is really what things are about in the war on drugs is an attempt to control people's experimentation, if you will, or expansion of their own awareness. And so the term entheogen is used by some writers. Jonathan Ott and a team with Gordon Wasson came up with that term, which essentially meant to note the divine spark from within, to the entheos. And so some people talk about that. In my book, The Spirit of the Internet, I actually compared cyberspace, the experience of being in deep cyberspace, if you're in a virtual reality mode for many hours, with the same, very same state of mind as being in what we call entheospace, or in, if you alter your consciousness through fasting or twirling dancing, trance dancing. There's meditation. There's a lot of ways to do it, and the shamans, of course, use various plants to do it. So there's a lot of ways to do it, and my point is that it really doesn't matter how you get to some expanded sense of awareness. It's an expanded sense of awareness, just like your listeners right now are in a part of entheospace with us, because physically they're not in the room with us, and we're not in a room with it. It's like a telephone place call. It's taking place in another place, and cyberspace and entheospace are pretty much the same thing. They have at least overlaps, and so this conference about states of mind is pretty broad, although it's also being held on the 60th, near the 60th anniversary of Albert Hofmann's discovery of LSD, which most people don't understand the significance of the fact that the first controlled nuclear reaction on this planet occurred only like 3 months before Dr. Hofmann's discovery of LSD, and it's sort of the polar opposites, which is at least in our community, the psychedelic community, which is extremely large worldwide, is a very important piece of history to keep in mind this balance.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. You're saying it's extremely large worldwide. I just want to ask you, how large do you think it is? I mean, I'm sure that's true. At this conference, I see very many people. It sold out days ago, and it's there's more people than bought tickets, I'm sure. Do you have any sense of how large it is? You include the indigenous people who deal with spirit plants?
I had a man, I fail to remember his name right now. He is the dean emeritus of the School of Criminal Justice at Long Beach State. They train most of the LAPD graduate students. And he told me that he wrote an essay, in fact, that he said that if everyone in this country who had used some proscribed psychoactive substance in the last 12 months, if for 2 weeks their ears turned green, he went through a list of every occupation profession you can imagine. Now, I think the community is really, and counting indigenous people for sure, in the hundreds of millions. And I was shocked to find this. I'll give you to give you the headlines of my odyssey. I was 42 years old, living in Dallas, Texas, and a businessman, Republican, big donor to the Republican Party, as straight as you could imagine. I've never taken any kind of substance myself. And I was about 42 years old, and I decided it was time for my midlife crisis. I won't go into the details, but long story short, at that time, MDMA, which some people call ecstasy, was legal. Had it not been legal, I never would have tried it. I tried it, and it literally changed my life. I remembered who I was as a youngster, at least. Now, this isn't a heavy-duty psychedelic. There's no visions or anything. And what everybody that I know that took it for the first time said, well, I felt like that before when I feel really good. And so, that was how I got in touch with this. And at the time, I thought I was the only person on earth who even saw any potential for a spiritual movement with this. And because I just thought this was things kids did that partied. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I was in Vietnam when my friends were growing long hair and taking acid. And so I had missed that whole culture. And here I come to it late at life, which I think is a real advantage. I'm 60 years old now, and I have come to find out that this is an extremely large community. And it took me years to find this. I finally started coming to some of these conferences and meeting people. And there's not a city worldwide I have been to, including some in Vietnam lately, that I haven't bumped into what I call tribe members. And it's really an incredible movement of energy, of consciousness, that was actually initiated, I think, primarily by the indigenous people. Many of them, the elders, are now speaking out and bringing this information out. And it's astounding how deeply interconnected to the psychedelic community are two things. High tech, the internet was designed, built, and is run by acid heads, and the environmental movement. That it's amazing how deeply Gaian and technological at the same time these substances make people. So, you know, forget all the pros and cons wherever you stand on it. Just as an interested party, if you back off into space and you look at this from a distance and you say, what's going on evolutionary-wise? That these humans have evolved and they're moving these big pieces of material and building cities are crystallizing. And now these electronic tendrils are connecting these cities. What's happening to consciousness? And you know, there are serious scientists that are not in the psychedelic movement that are studying the evolution of some sort of a global intelligence just in our computer networks. And, you know, there's a lot of high weirdness going on many fronts, and it's my belief, and there's some research that bears this out that Ray and Anderson have done with the cultural creatives, that the psychedelic community is got some sort of a you know, they go out to as far as they can to the edge and are starting to bring things back. And a lot of this is ineffable, but now artists are coming back, drawing great images, and people are saying, what does this mean? What do you think that means? And I've seen that before. And we don't know what's happening, but I think even the least tuned-in person on this planet senses something is going on, something big. And, of course, you know, let's be honest here. We could all be delusional, you know, and just having a good time, but most of us are pretty serious about this work and are trying to really figure out what's going on. You know, we're between, you know, all the traditions, whether it's astrological, you know, the window between Pisces and Aries is 300 years wide if you're looking for a line in the sky. And but you have the Mayan prophecies, the Hopi, and many other traditions point at least, even the scientific tradition like Werner Vinge has predicted a technological singularity, a singularity being something we can't see behind, occurring between 2005 and 2020. So, and maybe it's just the press of the times. You know, humans are being bombarded with so much more information than we ever had before. But I really, my deep-seated belief that has evolved from being a conservative Republican to now being sort of a future edge kind of walker, looker, seeing what's going on. I find that everybody senses something's happening, and you know, it's as good your guess is as good as mine. But I do believe the psychedelic community has tapped on some things that we've been hearing at the conference. There's a lot of themes coming through, and the thing that I like most is that there seems to be a lot of hope. Even though things are dark now, I don't think it's ever been darker for this country as a democracy, a republic. But on the other hand, you know, there's do we have like 2 minutes that I can tell about a thing called the I think it's called the Edge Phenomena. A mathematician in the early 70s published a book that talked about if you have the center of gravity of the entire solar system that we're in, sometimes the planets line up so that the collective center of gravity is effectively inside the area where the sun's center of gravity, and at times they even coincide, but oftentimes the center of gravity of our solar system moves outside of the surface of the sun, and only occasionally do they coincide, and I believe it's called the surface effect. And these are usually very unusual periods of time. The last one was the year 68 to 72. And look what happened in that time. You had the Kennedy and King murders. You had a lot of riots, but you also landed men on the moon. You know, so there's this balance. It happened in 1789, the French Revolution. It's happened during the Great Depression. There's been these periods. Whenever this coincides, there's a really traumatic period for the Earth, both good and bad. Well, the last time this ended was in 1972. And usually these are 3 to 4 year periods. A new one of these periods began in 2002 and doesn't end until 2011. So that too coincides with this, the Mayan prophecy of the 2012, et cetera. So there's, you know, it's just one thing after another. I don't think there's any one of these things that's more true than the other, but it's like that old comedy movie, The Mad, 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 Mad World, where there's a dozen people heading to the same spot from different directions and having all these catastrophes along the way. And that's maybe what's going on with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you'd have to be totally out of it. I mean, I can't even imagine to be so out of it that you don't know something's going on. It doesn't look too good to me most of the time, and yet I know, of course, that there are definitely good things happening and people waking up. And I feel my psychic abilities are really opening up, and I think a lot of people feel that way. They're much more than they have been before, and I just feels like living on the edge all the time. Kind of, even if I think, oh my God, I'm not even being bombed. Here I am, and you know, my comfy house and my comfy life, and you know, just. We're so privileged compared to most people in the world, and yet it feels very much, certainly as an activist who's well informed about the horrors going on, it feels like living on the edge, and many people I know feel that way. Well, Lorenzo Haggerty, what you said about the internet and indigenous people, it's so interesting. I mean, I'm more, even though I use the internet, I'm more earthbound, I think. And as my tendency for whatever reason. But it is very interesting because they seem so opposite from each other, you know, living in the jungle with no technology whatsoever, just living totally close to the earth. And the other one is kind of scary to me, people getting so lost in the internet and so disconnected from personal contact with each other and the earth. So it's kind of fascinating that they come together in this way.
There's two interesting things about the internet. One quick item is a company I'm working with, the Digital Space Commons. We're building tools, that some of which we're going to give away, that will provide a human sense of presence to the internet, so that when you're on a web page, you'll know 3 or 4 other people are there at the same time, and if you want to, you can just click a little button and chat with each other about that page. So that's the kind of things that we're trying to do. The other one about the indigenous people and the internet and all that, a quick little story. The first time I experienced the sacred brew of ayahuasca was with a Peruvian shaman, and my experience was very internet-like. I felt it was like a cyberspace experience for me, and I very apologetically the next day went up to the shaman and I said, I'm sorry I didn't see the jaguars and the snakes. To me, it was the Matrix. I was in the internet. And this wonderful man gave me this great big smile, handed me a business card with an email address and says, Mama Ayahuasca loves the internet. I don't know what that means, but it was a fun time.
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting story, all right. Well, and I guess you're probably more grounded in the internet. I'm more grounded on the earth.
Exactly. And you know, you said, well, I have to use it for something. And we don't say that about the telephone. You know, we just use it. And that's the thing with the internet. Don't let it be anything. Let it be transparent. And that's where it needs to get. You know, you use it when you have to, but you don't even think you're using it. Same as the telephone. Mm-hmm. It's there's a lot of things it's doing. It's more important than the phone. And yet, don't think of it as technology. Just use the parts of it that serve you. And don't feel bad about using anything else.
And one of the things that I, of course, am aware of is how few people in the world have the internet. I guess, what is it, have about 50% of the population in the United States, and everyone says, oh, you can use the library, but that's not quite the same, even though it's true. And I don't know what the percentage of people in the world, and maybe that's why people can develop other senses and other skills better without the internet. I don't know. Would you like to comment about that?
Yeah, it's actually much more hopeful than we realize, and there's a big possibility that within the next few years there'll be more people outside the U.S. using the internet than in the U.S., and that's due to the great advances of what they call Wi-Fi, or the wireless fidelity, wireless internet. And it's freeing the internet devices from the cable to the wall. And the European countries are ahead of this, and Japan are ahead of us. Howard Rheingold has a great book out called Smart Mobs, and it's about the thumb generation, the thumb tribes. They have these little computers that are wireless. And this is going to change a lot, because in third world countries, they don't have the telephone infrastructure we do, and so they're all going wireless ahead of time. And at one time, they thought that it was going to be the cell phone companies that rolled out this wire. Well, they were just too slow. And now essentially the garage hobbyists are building out these Wi-Fi LANs. And you can go to many spots, particularly in San Francisco and even in San Diego and definitely in New York, that are people put up free little internet connections. And if you're within 100 feet of that station, you've got a free connection. And so, and these devices are coming down in price. And so it is a tough decision. Do we just hold everything until everybody gets equal? And you know that we can't do that. But fortunately, it's the prices are coming down, and people are putting up these internet connections for free in neighborhoods. People are putting them up and not password protecting them. So it's evolving. It's almost like Gaia is saying, you know, you've got a tool now that, you know, with the consolidation of the airwaves into a few corporate conglomerates combining everything. I think that these new technologies like the internet and these radio programs like this, that you can have the radio program here, you can stream it onto the internet as well and reach a worldwide audience. And so, you know, it's extending the people's range, and so it gives us a great tool to balance the other side. And so we have the yin and yang, you know, the corporate world that's starting to crumble with the Enrons and all of the other end of Pisces thing, and so we're moving into the new age, the age of Aquarius, which is going to be wonderful, but you know, it can also be kind of mechanistic and detached. And so I think our job, and particularly our job when I talk about the tribe, the psychedelic community, is to make sure that this next age has a human face, that empathy and love are the predominant values, and our technology is just our you know, it's a tool. You know, our shoes are technology. You know, our running water, our showers are technology. So technology just is our servant, and it should have spirit in it. We should remember to put human spirit into our technology and not let it just run us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, too, with this wireless technology. It's really not good for our health, but it is good for other things, I guess. Maybe there's always a trade-off. I don't know. Now, are you saying that they have wireless technology way out in the boonies in other countries? Because I thought you had to be close to towers and all that.
No, the wireless satellite transmissions are getting very good, high-speed internet satellite transmissions, and they will be pretty much global coverage quite soon. Interesting story there. I had a dinner several years ago with the CEO of one of the big, at the time, one of the really big dot-com companies, and he said, I'll tell you why high-speed wireless internet is going to take off. He says, we've all made a ton of money. We've moved up into the mountains, and we're so far away, we can't get high-speed internet connections ourselves. We're putting all our R&D money into high-speed wireless, and that really has happened now. And so that's taking place, so that you'll be able to have high-speed wireless internet connection in Peruvian jungles if you don't have it already. I know it's in many countries already, many, many hard-to-reach spots.
Lorenzo Haggerty, you said we have very little time left, but you talked about this psychedelic tribe as being much more evolved than a lot of people, especially those in power. Although who knows what they do.
Well, I would say that there is not a work group in corporate America consisting of 10 people that doesn't have one or two members of the tribe at the minimum, and that's at all levels of government, all levels of religious organizations, all levels of society. These substances have been part of our civilization since before recorded history, and this is the first time ever they've been made illegal. And so the people have just responded like naturally evolving people will, and they're still using these substances. And the tribe is huge. It's everywhere. It's really gaining in momentum, and now people are starting to speak out and say, yes, this is really who I am.
Well, it's been interesting to at the Mind States Conference here that a lot of people are talking about where we are in the world. And from my point of view as a social change, peace and justice activist, it's been a lot about that.
And you know, we really appreciate you coming here, too, because this whole community gets marginalized by most people without even thinking about it. And for someone like you to be open-minded enough to come here and say, hey, what's really going on, and then to bring some messages back to your listeners. And it doesn't matter whether people agree with us or disagree. It's just that these are more facts that people just need to add into their own processing and process what they think of what we're doing. But at least you're bringing the facts out to the people, the real world, and not just the gloss that they get from the mass media. And we really do appreciate you being here, too.
Great. Well, thank you. And Lorenzo Haggerty, you want to talk about your contact information and your websites in the couple remaining minutes we have here so people can be in touch with you and expand their minds?
Sure. You can find a lot about what we're doing at matrixmasters.com. And you remember that easily because you are the master of your own matrix. So it's www.matrixmasters.com. And the other one is the Digital Space Commons. It's digitalspace.com. And that's where we're building a community of new products to lend a human presence to the web and the Internet, so you'll feel more that you're in human company when you're surfing the net. So that's digitalspace.com.
And do you think that the Internet's going to get shut down or controlled much more real quickly? Last words, I'd like to leave it up, but here I am.
Absolutely impossible. Can't be done. Oh. There's a shadow Internet that nobody knows about, and it will survive.
Oh, really? Okay, still have another minute, but we can end here.
Well, let me put it this way then about the shadow Internet. As long as there are phone communications, there are people now, routers that used to cost $50,000 are now $100, and so the people are building their own Internet, and as long as the long-distance phone companies are there, there will be an Internet, and there will be a way to keep it from being censored.
Well, that is very hopeful. Okay, well, thank you so much, Lorenzo Haggerty, and my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, SUESUPRIANO.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979.